to FinTech's DEI Discussions podcast series. This is the Humans of FinTech chapter, and we are here today to celebrate the wins, raise awareness of the challenges, and walk the talk for change across the entire financial technology industry. Today, we are joined by Adam Price, Director of Solution Marketing at Ping Identity. He is here to share how he walks the talk for inclusion in our sector and what more he wants done. Great to have you here, Adam. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Nadia. Great to be here. Thank you for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
I am super excited about this conversation. We met at the Open Banking Expo. You had a number of talks. I think I caught you just before you getting interviewed by somebody else. So you were definitely sharing some really important insights. But before we get into all of that, tell us a little bit more about your current role.
Yeah, sure. Where do I start? So I've been in this space, an identity space, identity access management for perhaps 4 or 5 years and tech around 12 years. My current role is really much focused on driving solution marketing for Ping Identity. And so I work with go-to-market teams, I work with some of our product teams to try to piece together technologies that can deliver value for customers.
Nice. And tell us a bit about Ping Identity and the mission of the business.
So Ping Identity has been around for quite a long time. It's one of the foremost identity leaders in the marketplace. And Ping's mission is really to deliver what we call experience with a better experience. And if I can just expand on what that means, it's effectively focused on ensuring that identity can enable a secure and seamless experience across all digital channels. So in other words, identity is something that we encounter every day when we try to access resources and services, whether as a worker or a consumer. And at Ping Identity, we try to elevate the experience and security whilst ensuring that customers are able to engage with the services as seamlessly as possible. So that's really in a nutshell what we do, and we're a global business headquartered in Denver, but operating very much at a global level.
Mm. Super important, the fact that you're focusing on experience and the experience of the customer. I think that's going to be a huge focus for the entire industry as we go into next year. There was something I wanted to talk to you about. So we met at the Open Banking Expo, and actually within the probably 10-15 minute conversation we had, you taught me loads about universal digital vulnerability. So I wanted you to share some of that with the audience.
Yeah, sure. As you may have heard, digital vulnerability is something that is moving quite rapidly to the top of board agendas, particularly in the financial services space, the advent of the consumer duty regulations in the UK, but also in continental Europe. The emergence of different regulatory initiatives, even PSD3 is talking about how users can access services. And outside that, we've always thought of digital vulnerability as something that only affects a small cross-section of the population. So we tend to associate that with our mums and grands who are perhaps not digitally literate, or to associate it with people who may have permanent or temporal disabilities. But we like to think that digital vulnerability is actually a universal phenomenon. It affects all of us in a different way. So if I lose my mobile phone, I use that mobile phone to access a service or to authorize a certain member of my team to access a resource, I become digitally vulnerable. So the idea is that digital vulnerability affects us all at different stages of our lives and different circumstances. And we lean quite heavily on this model that we developed based on some research done in psychotherapy. So this is a model called vulnerability circles. And this model was developed to help practitioners support people with mental health difficulties. We took that model and applied it to the digital domain. And we effectively see three domains of universal digital vulnerability. So the first domain is really contextual. So this is about the circumstances that you might find yourself in. For example, a crude example, I was trying to find the building where we are now. My phone got wet, it stopped working, I couldn't contact you, I become vulnerable. So that's an example of that contextual vulnerability. And then you have what's called inherent vulnerability. So inherent vulnerability is really associated with you as an individual. Now that might be associated with permanent or temporal disabilities. If I, for example, break my arms whilst playing rugby, I'm not able to then access my digital device. And by implication, I'm then excluded from the system, so to speak. And then the third domain is really around what's called the wider systemic factors. So these are systemic factors like prejudice and bias and certain societal structures that might prohibit you from being able to access those digital devices. So an example of that might be, for example, big issue in the UK is poverty. If you're growing up in an environment that is impoverished, there's a strong linkage and strong likelihood you'll be excluded from internet access, from digital devices and so forth. So when you combine those three domains together, you then start building up a picture of universal digital vulnerability. So that, for us, is very important, because we as technology providers have to be able to understand what that landscape is and to fit our offerings to really address those problems.
Mm. I think this is super fascinating, and the way you've explained those three different areas, I think will be eye-opening for many people and actually encourage them to start thinking about the systems in which they put in place and how accessible are they. In your mind, how should technology respond to these challenges?
Where do we start? This is a difficult question. That's why when you and I met at Open Banking Expo, there was an entire stage dedicated for 2 days to customer vulnerability. And you start listening to some of these conversations and you realize that this is no longer just about meeting your company's CSR or ESG agenda. This is about addressing a problem that's fundamental. So how should technology address this particular problem? I think ultimately it starts off with how the technology life cycle and software development life cycle is conceived of. We can think about how technology can actually address these issues, but if you have a team that's building, testing, and deploying the product that doesn't really have an understanding of those underpinning factors, then how can they build a product to meet those needs? Mm. So there's a huge component here around having a diverse software development life cycle, have product scrum teams that actually are able to understand that in depth. And actually, I've been to a series of events this year where you really see the progressive and really ambitious technology providers completely reimagining who sits around the table, who builds the product, who evaluates it, and who deploys it. So generically speaking, it's really important to address that. But from an identity perspective, I would like to say that there are four domains in which this actually addresses the kind of problem. And first of all, there's this notion of inclusion by design. So inclusion by design means that when you're building a product, vulnerability and the problems associated with those are not somewhere at the bottom of the backlog or the requirements list. They're actually center stage. So you're designing the product for the problems from day zero, rather than doing it in a piecemeal downstream. So inclusion by design is one domain. The second domain I would like to say is around adaptive. So adaptive identity, digital identity, is really important, because once we understand what those needs are, the technology has to be able to evolve and the needs that you have at a given point in time. So what does that mean? That means if you're not able to access your web portal via your desktop, if you cannot call a call center agent, if you cannot use your mobile device for whatever reason, then digital identity is really critical to then shifting to the appropriate channel that is appropriate for you to use. And I've got a personal example of that. So I've got a close family member who unfortunately had a critical brain condition, and overnight that person went from being very tech savvy to being unable to interact with any form of technology, let alone mobile devices. And all of a sudden overnight, that person was excluded from being able to use their banking apps, from being able to submit a tax filing returns, and all of a sudden that individual was just locked out. So being adaptive is really important. And by implication, you need to really understand the context in which that user finds themselves in. So where are they operating? What is the challenge? And what channel of choice at what particular point in time is most appropriate? So that's the kind of second thing. The third thing is around digital identity enabling connected peer circles. So in that example that I just cited, where that individual wasn't able to access those services, that's fine, because there are a number of individuals in the trusted circle at work, in their private life, that they can lean on to actually verify that they are who they claim to be. So therefore, they can help to enable them access to those services. So having that kind of delegated circle of trusted agents within your work and personal life is really important to that goal. But fourthly, it's also about balanced security. So particularly in financial services space, we're familiar with this within the PSD2 landscape. We have strong customer authentication, KYC checks, all these kinds of things that really we have to interact with as financial service consumers. However, we don't have to apply the same rigor of security at every touch point. We have to understand what the risk is at a given point in time and then apply the appropriate level of security. So again, that security has to be adaptive. If my grandma's trying to transact £20 for a banking app, she shouldn't be forced to complete three hoops of authentication. Mm. Likewise, if I'm trying to transfer 10 grand into another account, I should be forced to compel that. All these things combine together, and really identity touches every aspect and every touch point. So you bring that together and you have that kind of recipe for success.
Mm. I think what I really enjoy about everything that you're sharing with us today is this inclusion by design. And when you said, look, this is part of the build from day one. It's not something that's half-heartedly done or 27 on a 25-point agenda that comes in much later on. It's front and centre. It is right at the core of what you're doing. And I think a lot of the conversations I have with people on this podcast is, okay, this is your mission. How is it then reflected within the workplace? What does an inclusive working culture look like? And I feel like actually you've touched upon so much of this because, you know, you're dealing with so many different teams that have to be thinking along these lines as well. When we met at the Open Banking Expo, you spoke about team values, ESG initiatives. You used different examples from banking providers and consumer duty and regulation. So I'd love you to touch on a bit more of that with us today in this pod.
Yeah, sure. Where do I start? I guess the most compelling thing that I've come across recently is the Lloyds Bank Consumer Index. They've been running this for 6 years now, and it's a comprehensive report where they look at how their consumers interact with services. And there's a really shocking statistic that I came across there, which claims that 27% of the UK population are digitally vulnerable.
Wow.
27%, that's a third of the population who are not able to easily access services. And that's really fascinating and concerning at the same time, because this is not just about addressing those individuals who are potentially excluded from the entire system, but there's also a business sense in there somewhere. And when I was with you at the Banking Expo, and actually when I was in Frankfurt recently at the Cooper Jacol event on cyber evolution, providers are starting to think how they can tap into unserviced markets. So there's a whole idea here about how can you encourage perhaps the elderly who might not be digitally inclined to feel comfortable, to feel like they can trust their provider, they can invest their hard earned money into an investment provider, for example. And so this is not just about social responsibility, regulation, but it makes business sense. And if you look at some of the most innovative providers, for example, HSBC launched an account for homeless people. Now, on the face of it, that doesn't sound very innovative, but it actually really is. Because most people who are homeless do not have an email address, do not have a phone number, do not have a postcode. And guess what? Those three things are required when you need to open up a bank. There's things that are required for you to complete your KYC checks. Mm. And so there's a lot of innovation in the sector now where those providers are really looking to tap into those unfound markets. To your first question, how do we then look at that and try to bring that into how we are creating a diverse workplace to address those issues? I had an interesting conversation with one of our technical leads a few months ago, and he slacked me and he said, look, Adam, have you seen this? The EU Accessibility Act has put requirements on us to ensure that our graphical user interface, or GUI for short, meets these requirements. What do you think? Do you think that we're in a position to do something with this? It's part of our go-to-market plan. And then I asked him a question. I said, that's great, but who in our team is able to give us the real user-centered insight on whether that graphical interface will be fit for them? That's fine just to meet the requirements. Mm. The EU Accessibility Act would specify what you need to do, what kind of font size, what kind of colors you would need to use in the palette. But it's fine just implementing that as a technology provider, but you really need to understand what users are thinking of that. So there's a whole kind of ethnographic component to that. Mm. And it's on us as technology providers to really invest in that. And that's not something that we necessarily always all tech providers have in-house. That's why we have to lean heavily on third parties and partnerships with organizations that tapped into those communities, that have access to those particular service users, to be able to really understand that what we're doing is relevant.
Yeah, I really like that point, because it's one thing hitting a regulation and going, great, and this is the huge problem within inclusion, I've ticked that box. But actually, why are we doing it? Why are we looking to tick that box? Who are we trying to serve? And are we doing that fairly and appropriately? I think that's a hugely important point. My last question is something I ask everybody on this podcast, because I believe in encouraging everybody to be involved in driving forward inclusion and inclusion within our sector. And I wanted to ask you, what would you advise our audience when I ask the question, what more should we be doing to foster inclusive finance?
Look, I'm a fan of the 80-20 rule. 80% being spent on understanding problems before you dive into solutioning. And actually, in the tech world and in the financial services industry, you will see that in many cases the inverse is true. Right? 20% on problems and 80% on solutionizing. You really need to understand the source of the problem. And the important thing is that this challenge and this problem is not something that's static. It changes day to day, year to year. We can only look back at what's happened in this country in Europe with COVID. The circumstances of branch closures, forcing users into digital services, then the subsequent macroeconomic shifts, rise in interest rates, all those factors are driving needs, preferences, and behaviors. And so I think it's really important to not just spend 80% on that, but actually have a continuous culture of almost circular planning and reviewing. So this is what in the tech world and identity, we always talk about cyclical development process. We talk about agility. But agility is not just about building out and refining the product, it's also about understanding the problems and having that user insight, having that ethnographic input. And I think that's really important. That's something that we as a company value very much and try to bring into our roadmap and into our thinking about how we then work with partners to deliver on aspiration.
I'm so happy that you've shared that, because I especially think that is true for anybody working for inclusion and trying to drive inclusion further forward. It's the flip reversal of that 80-20. It's 20% on what's the problem. Okay, I think I know the problem. Right, let's go for it. And then they get trapped and they get stuck because they're not actually understanding the problem they're trying to solve. So I really appreciate all your insights today. Your perspective has been super, super valuable. And again, I've learned so much, and I know our audience will have too. So thank you for joining us on FinTech's DEI Discussions. Let's listen, let's learn, let's walk the talk.